When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everybody, welcome back to the Total Skippers Podcast. My name is Cyril. Today I'm joined by Jake. Say hello, Jake.
Hello, mate.
Well done for turning up this time. Say hello, Billy.
Thanks, buddy.
Hello, mate. You alright?
Say hello, Jerry Pie.
Hello, mate. How are we doing?
I'm doing well. Had a good day today. You had a good day today.
Me?
Yeah, you had a personal conversation with Darren Huckabee.
It wasn't much of a conversation, to be fair.
No, it was me replying to a tweet.
It's him basically going, what did you call me?
I am not irrelevant!
So for a little bit of context, folks, Jed does this thing on our social media. It's Random Footballer of the Day, where whatever footballer is on his mind that day gets tweeted out. And today it was Hux, the mighty Hux.
Coventry City, Norwich City legend.
He retweeted it, so what did he say? Not random.
he said less
random
of the
footballer
random.
Of the day, Darren Huckabee.
Less of the random, he said.
Less of the random.
At the end of the day, right, it's not like we're saying you're random as in like no one thinks of you. It just randomly came to my mind.
Yeah, that's how
it is. Like the other day, I did Papa Booper Diop the other day, and some guy was like, oh, he's not random, he's a legend. It's like,
yeah,
well, how often do you talk about Papa
Booper
Diop? Every day. Someone comment to that, to his reply saying, how often do you think about him?
Exactly.
And to be fair to the lad, he did say, oh, no, never.
And then he came back with, because I put his nickname on there, The Wardrobe, right? And he came back like, was he really called The Wardrobe? And I was like, well, I thought he would have known that if he wasn't so random. Like, just saying the guy's a legend, like, you should know what his nickname is.
Yeah, just out here defending. Just all over Twitter, just like looking for references. To be fair, I think of him every time I go into that wardrobe. I think of him because he's the size of it. Right.
Oh, just get another t-shirt out of me, Papa.
Yeah. So, into the football, boyos, on the running order. We have, at the very first, we're going to talk about Everton, the whole Everton situation. And I shall go straight to Billy Boy. In my opinion, before you start, Billy Boy, I think this probably should be Frank Lampard's last game.
Yeah.
And he lost the El Sacchio. Them's be the rules. You got to get sacked. And I know before people fucking comment, you know, don't talk about a guy's job like this. Like, Frank is doing fine, trust me. He's not signing on Monday, okay? He's going to be absolutely fine. Billy, over to you. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the manager, he's got to go. I thought it was a brave signing, because I mentioned when that appointment was made, or just before that appointment was made, Everton look a lot like Villa did in the build up to us being relegated. You know, we've had the flashy signings, stuff like that. We've had the big name managers. We had Gerard Houllier, for example. They had Carlo Ancelotti, and the manager to get us relegated was Remy Gard. Now, I thought that they were going to appoint a foreign manager, maybe get relegated last year. Fair play to Lampard. He managed to keep them up. But this season, they're in exactly the same position, if not worse, and he's got to go. The club's just in a mess.
Last year, it kind of felt like the fans just pushed them over the line. You know,
yeah.
I thought it was a done deal. I thought, I was like, this team so low in confidence, I don't see them bouncing back. And they did. Because they got a new manager, rallied the team. The home games were particularly important for Everton last season. And now the atmosphere in the stadium is not good.
It's just toxic, isn't it?
Yeah.
And can I just make a can I ask a question now just on Billy's point? Billy, are you saying that that Frank Lampard is like the Everton equivalent of your Tim Sherwood?
Yes. Although Tim Sherwood got the
final... Glad the important question's being answered on the Talk Skimmers podcast.
What I will point out is after that, that Tim Sherwood, I don't think, has had another job in
no, exactly.
No, he's not.
Frank, it's probably not looking good for you if that's the... If that's who you're being likened to at the moment.
To be fair, I wish you could be relegated as a pundit. Sick of fucking serum.
Going to presenting pointless or something like that.
No, carry on, Billy boy.
Yeah, I just think the whole club's in a mess. Lampard's got to go. I don't think he's a very good manager anyway. Like you said, Simo, last season he kind of managed to rally them up, get them up. The atmosphere at Goodison Park was booming. It's not like that this year. It's so completely toxic. And he probably needs to go for his own sanity, but he's not a good enough manager to get them out of this situation at all. He's not got enough experience, and tactically, he's not there anyway. You know, he said himself the other week, didn't he? You know, I took over and we were in a relegation fight, and then I don't know where he was trying to go, but he basically said, "We're still in a relegation fight."
No, I think I know exactly the interview that you're talking about, and I think it does go. You know, we you know, got over the line, just stayed up by the skin of our teeth last season, and made some investments. They didn't work, and never back there. I think there's actually a bit where he says, "I know I'm not the best manager," or something like that.
Oh,
but no, I think he's a fine manager. He's a fine manager. He's so early on in his managerial career. He's been such a high profile footballer that
that's why
people,
he's got the jobs though.
Yeah, yeah, it's why he's got the job. He gets the jobs
everywhere
off the back
he's
of
been,
this.
He should have really got promoted at Derby. He didn't do very well with Chelsea, although they were under a transfer embargo. You've got that whole argument to go with it. He didn't really do very well there. And at Everton, that he's a year into the project, if you like, mm-hmm. and they're in the exact same position. He's just not that good of a manager. Maybe in 10, 15 years' time, I'll be saying, fair play, he's kind of turned it around. He's a bit of a Warnock, Pardew, Pearson kind of manager.
I don't know.
He's not going to turn into Pep or Klopp overnight, is he?
I would absolutely love it if he becomes the next Alan Pardew. just bounces around the clubs. Just bounces around the clubs. Oh, we haven't got enough of them left anymore.
No, I think obviously... He's not leaving Everton of his own accord. He's going to get sacked at some point, right? If not this week, and sometime in the very near future, Frank Lampard is probably going to be out of a job, right? There's a number of things he can do. He can wait around for another job. I don't think that job is coming in the Premier League, personally. I don't think another owner or board are going to roll the dice on Frank, unless it looks like they're going down and they kind of just want some sort of bump, right? But I think you might need to do what Scott Parker's done. You might need to go abroad, you know, where... He can maybe recover a little bit of the reputation, then come back. But he's only, 3 years, 4 years? 4 years into a managerial career, so...
Yeah, but doesn't that say a lot about how his managerial career's gone? Considering he's been in management for 3 or 4 years at 3 or 4 clubs. At 3 clubs, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, he's got sacked at Chelsea, going to get sacked at Everton. He left Derby on his own accord to take the Chelsea job. You know,
but you're forgetting
really
that he got that
lot.
Chelsea team just far enough in the Champions League that a good manager could come in and get them over the line. So, some sort of credit. I don't know. It's not a full Champions League credit, but it's like well done for. Well done for being present for a wee while before Thomas Tuchel came in and won the Champions League.
Well done for putting the cones out.
He put the cones out, Thomas Tuchel came in and took the session. I don't know. I think the Everton board need to go. I think that relationship is severed. On you go, Jake.
I think the main problem with Everton is there's such a massive discontent between the fans, the team, and the board. They're almost three separate sort of entities all fighting against each other, because certainly the Everton fans I've spoken to in my family, they're fed up with the board, they're fed up with the players now. And, you know, I think the worst thing that can possibly happen for Everton is to get relegated, because they've got that massive new stadium coming. And you don't want to be paying for that in the Championship. I can imagine that for free.
Jed's looking forward to it.
If we had Everton away next season, oh, I'd be all over that, honestly. Genuinely, I think that they probably are going to go down. I think it's very tight, but that squad just does not look good enough. Like, they just don't look. No. They don't look at it. And I think even if somebody comes in, gives them a bit of a boost, etc., now there's still quite a long way to go to the end of the season. You know, if it was around sort of like February, March time, and there's, you know, there's only 10, 12 games left, they're still in with the chance of staying up, then you could say potentially manager bounce might get them out of it. But I think there's just as much chance that somebody comes in now, takes over, gives them a couple of wins, etc., and then they just slip back into poor form, because I just don't think they're a very good side. So if I was Everton, I'd be going after Sean Dyche, to be honest.
I was going to say,
only man that can take over that role and keep them up at this.
Besides Big Sam, I think, but Big Sam's already been there. I don't know when
they go back. Yeah. Like, imagine the riots in Liverpool if that was happened. Oh my God. I think Goodison had burned down.
He didn't do too badly when he was there before, did he?
Big Sam worked,
mate.
He just didn't do anything above Big Sam level. That's the problem.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, dear me. What I was going to say is, I think we kind of joke about Sean Dyche quite a lot in terms of, like, any job that comes available, we immediately try and link him to it. Because we're big fans of his work. But
he's our patron saint.
Yeah, he has a patron saint as well. Genuinely, though, there is a lot of players at Everton that actually suit the profile of Sean Dyche's Burnley.
Exactly.
You know? They've got a lot of tall centre-backs that can play out in full-back. That's quite important to Sean Dyche's side. He's got players on the side that know the system. You know, Dwight McNeil played on the left side for Burnley and generally win the ball high up the pitch and start, you know, playing out from there. Sean Dyche tends to sort of compress teams and play it very long and force them into uncomfortable situations. There's a lot of players that fit that sort of profile. I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin would play a much simpler role on a Dyche side, but probably wouldn't actually be better suited to him. I think am I right to say the only manager to actually get a tune out of Dominic Calvert-Lewin is Carlo Ancelotti?
No, he did.
He planted him between the sticks. He says, I'm working on one-touch finishing, and I'm just playing between the sticks. He gave him a very, very simplistic job. So I think Dyche would probably land a similar thing on him, and he'd play that sort of Ashley Barnes, Chris Wood, very high up the pitch and sort of just looking to get on the end of something. So,
and they've got Mope as well. It kind of complements him perfectly in a Dyche formation, if you like.
They would probably play two up front.
Calvert Lewin's the Chris Wood. Neil Mope is like the Ashley Barnes, if you like. And it's shithouse as well. Mope is a shithouse. It just works. It would just work.
Neil Mope studying tapes of Ashley Barnes.
Right, now look how Ashley Barnes shoves his elbow into the defender's face. Like,
Write it down, Neil.
Neil's got his notepad out, like, elbow in the face.
He's a genius.
You made a really good point there, Billy, talking about the way Everton played this season without, you know, with Mope and Calvert-Lewin. The fact is that they replaced Richarlison with Mope, and he's been an absolute disaster for them because, to be honest, I don't really think Frank knows where to play him. And when he does, he just sort of shunts him all over the place. Calvert-Lewin can't find a tune out of him this season. I mean, they're just shambolic when you watch them. And I say that as a Liverpool fan who's quite happy to see them be shambolic. But, you know, They are. There's no other way to say it.
Do you really want a season without a Merseyside derby as a Liverpool fan?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. That'd be, honestly, the abuse that I would give every single member of my family is worth it.
Sorry, I was just going to say, the thing for Calvert-Lewin is he needs service. His best season under Ancelotti, he had Luke Adeyemi whipping balls in every single time he got the ball. And so it was so easy for that one-touch finish to be implemented. Since then, it's just been a shambles. Obviously, injury records haven't helped, but it's just all over the place. And under Frank, it's just not going to get any better.
No, I think Frank's asking stuff that's just not in the locker. I think he's asking stuff. He comes deep. He looks like a fish out of water. You know, he steps into a sort of, tries to support a midfield. For me, it just doesn't look.
Tries to be a bit like Harry Kane.
Yeah, okay. I suppose the modern striker, isn't it? Like, you even see Haaland kind of doing it and kind of looking like Bambi on ice. You know, and it's the modern manager wants everything that he possibly can from every single player. Whereas you see more experienced heads, kind of, I feel like they understand the players a little bit more, you know.
Dyche should just tell him to stay on the last defender. That's what I'd
say. Stay on the last defender. Make sure you're between the sticks. Wait for the service.
Yeah.
Try when your aerial duels, when your fouls. Yeah.
It's really simple when you put it like that. And that's what.
But I generally think that's what. I generally think that's what his job would be in a Sean Dyche system. I don't think he'd be like coming deep to receive it. I think
absolutely not, no.
You know, Sean Dyche prefers to win the ball probably midfield and in defence then counter attack, so he's not really going to be pressing a crazy amount, you know. So yeah, I think
makes perfect sense that appointment to bring in Sean Dyche. I mean like we've highlighted, the players fit it. It's just perfect. My only thing would be whether he would want to go there with the mess of the board and that.
I had a feeling that
Dyche was holding out for the Forest job personally, to see if Forest were going to struggle, but they don't look like they're struggling as much as everyone thought they would be at the minute. I have a feeling that Dyche was kind of holding out for that, because I think he is a Forest fan, so yeah, it's kind of a weird situation. But if I was him, and I wanted a job at a Premier League size club, I'd go to Everton. But the board is a mess. But it's not like he's not worked under difficult circumstances before. So.
Yeah, he worked in the hardest. I think he worked in the hardest circumstances in the league for the longest time.
100%.
Yeah.
So we shall see, boys. Right, moving on to more savoury subjects. Villa. Billy, you'll be happy we're moving on to this. We're going to talk about Aston Villa just because Unai Emery has had a great start. He's working out Europa League pending, as they say. Unai Emery, it's like when you appoint Emery, you've already won the Europa League. It's just pending. And couldn't be the case. I think watching Villa under Emery, everything just makes a bit more sense.
Yeah,
everything just makes a bit more sense. It's all the stuff that I feel like all Villa fans were crying out for Steven Gerrard to do with this system. They seem so obvious, but yeah, I'll go. Billy, you're the one here that's watched the most minutes of Aston Villa. What do you make of Unai Emery's Aston Villa?
To be honest with you, I think you summed it up perfectly. When you just said it just makes a lot more sense. You know, instantly he's had what seven, eight games maybe, in the league anyway. And you can already see what he's trying to do, what he's trying to implement, how we want to play, you know, in the spaces. He said before that we're not really stuck to a formation. It's about playing in the spaces. You know, you've got likes of Buendia, who, I mean, he's been a very frustrating player of late, but he can find those spaces. He can play that ball through every now and then. And you know, we've got Ollie Watkins up front, Leon Bailey up front, who they need a few chances to score, don't get me wrong.
They
will eventually score, as we've seen, thankfully. It's just so good. He's really got it feels like a proper warm atmosphere with the Villa fans, the Villa players. It just feels a little bit like a family as such. And Unai Emery's been the man to orchestrate it perfectly. It's just such a good feeling around the Villa. And the past few games as well, we've not necessarily looked fantastic. You know, we've got the Leeds game. If it wasn't for Martinez, we'd probably have lost that because some of the saves that he pulled off were just world-class. The same again yesterday as well. You know, he pulled off another couple of wonderful saves and kept us in the game, really. He's in the past two games, he's won us 6 points, essentially. And we've not really looked fantastic going forward. This is why I mentioned earlier when talking about Buendia. He's a very frustrating player because we lack that, or at the minute anyway, we're lacking that last bit of quality with the final ball through to supply Watkins and Bailey in that. And when we've
We just work hard and just create a good chance. Watkins and Bailey have been lacking in their finishing because there's been a couple of times where I thought, Bailey, that one he rattled over the bar, and you think, that's the easiest chance you're going to get all game.
Yeah.
It's the easiest chance you're going to get all game. Got all the time and the space in the world.
It's so frustrating, and then when you've got someone like...
I think that demoralises a team because they think, fucking work hard, we're fucking pressing, we're working hard to move up the pitch, we're working hard to create these chances, and then you see it going to Rose Ed. That's frustrating.
Absolutely. And then from my point of view anyway, you've got someone like Danny Ings on the bench, or had Danny Ings on the bench, and you're like, he's the goal scorer that we need to bring him on and he's going to score goals. You know, why aren't we starting him? We started him against Brighton. He scored 2 goals, won us the game. You know, he came on against Wolves and got the equaliser, you know. And then you realise when he came on early against Leeds, because Watkins had to come off with an injury, you then realise when he's starting and he's just not an Emery striker. He's just not quick enough to do the job that Unai Emery's asking of him. Now, in my opinion, I'd like for us to keep...
I'd rather the manager be decisive and just get Danny Ings a great move. Getting Danny Ings a move to West Ham, I think that makes Danny Ings very happy. I've seen him come on. I did watch West Ham and Everton, and Danny Ings did come on and affect the game in a positive way. So
he'll keep them up.
He'll be massive for West Ham. Yeah,
100%. He's the clinical finisher that West Ham haven't really got at the minute. And he will, if they weren't already going to stay up because of the quality of play that they've got, he will ensure that they do comfortably.
That stat that we posted the other day about that, but it was 23 strikers out of 55 for West Ham haven't scored.
22, that's yeah. I mean, 23 with Ings. He's not scored yet.
Well, yeah. But it's a ridiculous stat. I mean, West Ham have struggled for striker for God knows how long. And I think he that's a great signing by David Moyes. That's superb. Yeah.
And it's a good deal for all parties, really. I mean, I preferably, of course, being a fan of the selling club, I'd have liked a little bit more from him. You know, he's only 30. I mean, he's not over the hill just yet. He's a proven clinical striker in the Premier League. It's January. I'd have liked to have held out for a little bit more, but I think when that kind of money comes available, for a player that's not going to be in the manager's plans, and like you say, Sibbo, the manager's going to be decisive, it's a good move for all parties, you know. Daniels is happy playing regular football, you know. It's one of them things, really.
Unai has been staring at that pitch until midnight.
All night.
And he can't visualise Danny Ings.
Do you think that's what he's doing?
Yeah.
Just that. It gets to midnight and he just goes, Danny Ings has to go.
What are you doing, Unai? He's like, I've just
then
played
he goes home and phones
minutes,
David Moyes.
Oh, Moisey.
Can guarantee that he'll score against us in March, though.
Yeah.
Oh, it's nailed on.
Yeah.
You shouldn't expect anything less, to be honest. I think, in fact, you should be disappointed if he doesn't.
I think, I don't know if there's any other teams that are playing Claret and Blue, but Scunthorpe. Scunthorpe. That's the only I was going to say. It's the only move.
It's not completely ruled out yet.
Yeah.
There's one in Turkey, but I can't remember who they are now.
Is that Trabzonspor?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, they're still talking.
I tell you what.
Well, he is starting to thin, isn't he? You know when you take it when the time comes.
I'll tell you what, a couple of years at West Ham, a couple of years in Turkey, come back to Scunthorpe in League Two or whatever.
Yeah,
and wind it down.
Run it down to those luscious locks.
Hey, you know what? He should be pushing for that Turkey move.
He's not done just yet. He's got West Ham to keep up. Moving on, boys. I'm going to talk about the game we all watched this evening. Superb game of football throwback. Arsenal versus United at the Emirates. Arsenal, absolutely excellent. Manchester United, need to give them the credit of they're missing Casemiro, but they still gave Arsenal a good game. Jed, I'm going to come to you, mate. Thoughts on the match?
Oh, what a game. What a game that was. That was, and I'm not going to say it.
For the Premier League.
I didn't say it.
You just beat him to it.
Jake said it, so I didn't have to. I was going to say, I'm not going to say those words, but if there ever was one, honestly, it had a bit of everything, didn't it? It was a proper battle between two sides who play really good football. Some real quality on show. I mean, Saka's goal, excellent. Rashford's goal was excellent. It could have gone either way, really, couldn't it? Watching it, you were looking at it thinking, like, I actually can't call who's going to get the winner. And even when the winner did come, it would happen in dramatic fashion in the last minute. You know, was it offside? I actually thought it might have been offside, to be honest, looking at it in real time. And then I seen the replay and I thought, oh, yeah, he's probably level.
That atmosphere at the end of the game, though.
Yeah,
I just feel
you can tell there's something going on. Something's happening there, isn't it? Something's happening at Arsenal.
Zinchenko loves it as well. He fucking loves it. He's just up for it. He just looks like he's just a machine.
Someone posted a tweet. One of the lads that I follow is a Liverpool fan, and it was actually a really good tweet because when Liverpool won the league, that win against United, where Salah went through and scored the winner, well, the second goal and the atmosphere after the game, and you know, it felt like that was the moment that we knew we'd won the league. It almost felt to me like after reading that tweet, like this was similar. You know, a late winner against United. You know, January go a little bit further. It felt like the Arsenal side there turned another corner. You know, Arsenal teams before when United would have pegged them back a couple of times, they'd have capitulated and folded. But this side, fair play to them, fair play to Arteta. I mean, he's really turned them around. You know, last year just makes me laugh. All the Arsenal fans calling for his head, and now he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
he's superb. And I wonder, like, his the people at Arsenal completely backed him. You know, there was never I don't think there was ever any noise in the club that his job was actually in jeopardy. And I always just thought it's because he wasn't going to make a lot of noise. He wasn't going to demand a lot for the owners and the board and stuff like that, because it's his first job. He should just be happy to be there, as I say. But he's excellent. He's absolutely superb. I'm sold on the Doc. I like the Doc. I like how he acts in the Doc.
Yeah. That's the thing, everyone's buying into it, aren't they?
Yeah, everyone's buying it.
Yeah, that's the things us fans don't see, you know, when you see Arsenal fans kind of calling for his head, he's got to go, Arteta out, all of this. They can't see what's going on behind the scenes. And when you see that, you then completely understand why they stuck with him. And I remember we were all season long, we were laughing, we can't wait for this documentary. They've just finished fifth, last day of the season, Spurs have beat them to
then
it.
You watch it,
oh,
and
this
like,
is going to be hilarious.
Like, Adam Ramsdale was a beast. I love Adam Ramsdale. If it ended in it, like,
so
I fucking love Adam Ramsdale. He's the man.
For me, it's the fact that they've got they were selling t-shirts with his little drawings on, you know, from like the whiteboard. Like they've done that last season, like that would have been absolutely ridiculed.
No, that would have been,
like,
this season.
that'll be on the side of their stadium like next year, like, with a Premier League trophy underneath it. It's crazy. But I personally, I don't think they've sewn the title up yet.
No,
but I think that when they play, Man City
twice,
when they play Man City, if they beat Man City, that's the moment when you'll think then, yeah, this is Arsenal's title, and the only way they lose it is if they fuck it up, basically.
The thing is, if the two games against City are really, really important, right? Because if City go and win both of them, they smell blood. The same way they did against Liverpool. When Liverpool got on a little bit out ahead of City, and City just kind of, they got to about February, and then they just started rolling over teams, because they knew, you know, they're chasing, there's no room for mistakes. So I think, you know, when City go to the Emirates in particular, I think they really, really need to win that game. That's one thing that Liverpool always did when they were in these title races with City. They always gave them a game. You know, City would roll, they would have rolled five teams in a row, and then they get to Liverpool, and then it's like, buff, it's a wake-up call that, you know, that they can't do that every single week. At least two times a year.
You can't ever like write Man City off, can you? Just because of how they can just steamroll their teams. Like even in like at the minute, what you'd call probably not the best form, and they don't look as convincing as they normally do. They've gone out and they put four past Spurs in the midweek, albeit, you know, after going 2-0 down.
And a half.
But Haaland's gone and scored a hat-trick today, you know, and Wolves aren't a bad side either. They've really improved since Lopetegui came in. So
yeah, they have. Like, they've got a fairly decent defensive record as well.
Yeah. it's really, like, you really can't write them off, but there just seems to be something in the air at Arsenal where, like, you can just kind of feel that they're not going to throw this away. Like, you can tell they want it, and you can tell that the team is a team. You know, it's a proper unit. They're all buying into what Arteta's, you know, coaching them to do, and it's paying off.
They're all the right age. Because there's not a lot of trophies in that team. Players that have already went and won titles and stuff like that. There's not really not. Take Zinchenko out and that trophy cabinet gets a bit barren, apart from like FA Cups and stuff. But they all want it. They want it more. They want it more than any other team in the league, I think. I think they play with more desire than City just now, and I think they play with more desire than any other team in the league. They can tell every player to a man. It's desperate. They're absolutely desperate to win every game. It's such a good watch. I mean, I've always had stakes watching Liverpool, so we always like had a wee bit more intensity to it. Now I'm watching another team, they'll kind of play with that intensity, and they've invested, but nowhere near as much as the teams around them, you know. So, in a way,
definitely,
you know, I want to watch that team going, now that Liverpool are completely out of the question, I want to watch that team go and get over the line.
I think they deserve it as well.
Yeah, that's what I put in the group chat the other day. I was like, if they win the league, they deserve it. It's not just
as somebody with no stakes in the Premier League, like I just want to see variety, basically, and different teams winning it, because it does get boring when the same team wins it over and over again. And from my perspective, to see Arsenal win it would actually be really refreshing, especially as with such a good side, such good young players that they've got in there. You know, they play such good football, and that front three they've got of Martinelli, Odegaard and Saka is just, you know, at the moment, it's unreal.
Super.
Yeah, Trossard won't even start, you know. Like, it's crazy,
I think
it?
He actually did quite... He did affect the game.
He did very
tonight.
Well, when he came on.
You know, he did affect
the game. That's the thing, though. Like, he did. He'll be a good impact sub for them, I think, as well. Mm-hmm.
And but he's not. He plays on the left side, and he's not getting ahead of Martinelli.
That's why it's such a good signing, because it brings competition as well. If Martinelli has an off half and Trossard comes in and smashes it the second half, you know, Trossard then probably starts the next game, and you've all of a sudden got that healthy competition between places, and that itself makes you grow as a player.
Mm. Can I come on to a selfish point? Right, so if Arsenal go and win this league, Man City are going to go and buy fucking Jude Bellingham. They're going to go and get fucking Camavinga from Real Madrid or something like that. They're going to get like any player that's the form player in Europe.
10 fullbacks.
Yeah.
And he won't start any of them. I got a question, just a quick one.
And I think selfishly that'll make everything harder at Liverpool, because Man City are going to they're going to go in.
But they've not bought Haaland to win the Premier League for the fifth year in a row or 5 years out of six. They've bought Haaland to win the Champions League. And that's their ultimate goal, I think, at the end of the day. They obviously want to win the league.
Bored of the league. Using the trophies to wedge open doors and stuff.
Exactly. They're using the league now as a rest for the big boys to play the Champions League.
It's one long pre-season.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I get your point, Billy. I get your point. They need to be better at tournament football. Getting a lethal striker like Haaland does make you a bit better at tournament football.
Just a bit. 25 goals, I think it is now.
I just think they go out and they get whatever foreign player there is in Europe.
Yes. I mean,
they do that anyway, though, don't they, Simo, to be fair?
They do it anyway, but at the same time, they'll be making a point of it. Because there's an extra bit of like the season after Liverpool won the league. They were just like, fuck these guys. we're going to win this. And they did.
Yeah, but that's what you'd do if you could, though, wouldn't you? Like, if Liverpool could do that, then, you know, you wouldn't want them to do anything less, would you? So,
well, absolutely.
Maybe
well, I'll finish up
soon with these Qataris, potentially.
Yeah. So I read in The Athletic that last summer, Liverpool had £171 million bid. For Kylian Mbappe accepted pretty much, and Mbappe turned us down. Sad face.
That is ridiculous money. I read that
PSG have said the only club they would sell Mbappe to is Liverpool.
Well, it wasn't PSG, it was Mbappe. It was like, nah.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that. I respectfully decline. They said you know, the only club we would sell him to is Liverpool. They wouldn't want to sell him to like Real Madrid or City or anything like that. Is that because
they don't see Liverpool as a threat?
No, it's because they'd all be won by a player for like the next 30 years.
Yeah. That's it. We wouldn't sign anyone else ever again.
You know what I mean? You know, it'll be Mbappe, and then it'll be like Curtis Jones, and then who else is in the academy at this time? You know, who else is coming out of the academy?
Right back.
And well done Mbappe for clearly spotting that would be the case. So well done him. Right, boys, should we talk about FBL?
Do we have to?
Yeah. You had a great week.
Well, outside of the captaincy decision, it was all right. Oh shit.
I got 64. I'm currently at 64 points, and I've got two players to play, Perisic and Mitrovic. So it's a bit of a contrast between the two there, because on one hand, I want Perisic to have a clean sheet, but on the other hand, I want Mitrovic to score. So
you know what will happen. Fulham will score, but it won't be much of
it. It won't be much of it. Yeah.
Hopefully, it's Andrea Pereira.
Yeah, 100%.
In back post or something.
Yeah.
64 points, two players to play with, then JK Boy. I'm at 51 points, sadly. 56 is the average.
It's
up to 56.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So I'm 5 behind the average, right? Three players still to play.
Oh, you'll be fine.
One of them is Emerson Royale. Two players still to play. And that is Harry Kane,
who I've captained, as well.
And Mitrovic. So we need goals. Otherwise, I've had a bit of a disaster. And it'll be the first week I've got below average since we came back for World Cup.
This is a guaranteed 1-1 Son and bloody Tim Ream to score or something like that.
Trying to get a film player.
Yeah, I was. It's not Mitrovic.
It's like Brian McBride.
What a legend. You know,
Danny Murphy.
Collins John.
Collins John.
So I'm on 68 points at the minute.
Must be nice.
With two players still to play in my starting 11. So I've got Kane and Mitrovic. Both could bag. But I also, I I thought that Pep would play Foden today, and he wasn't even in the squad, let alone in the starting 11.
What's so good I'll on there, by the way?
I don't know, but I'll get Almiron's points anyway, and he got 3 to swap in for Foden. So technically, at the minute, I'm on 71 plus Kane and Mitrovic. So not too bad. A game week for me. Disappointed, though, because I started Nick Pope and left David Raya on the bench, and Raya's got 10 points, and Pope only got 6.
That's like me with Alisson. Alisson got 9, Pope got 6.
Yeah, it's annoying, that, isn't it?
But yeah.
Captain Haaland, though, crucially, and he's got 34 points. So
yeah, that was a good captain. That.
Every time I've captained Haaland and he scored a hat-trick, every time I've captained him and he scored a hat-trick, I've gone, why didn't I triple captain him? Like, every single time. It's happened, like, 4 times now. Like,
you know what? Today, really, today,
and I know the one week that I do triple captain him, he won't fucking score. So,
well, that was it. Oh, welcome to the club.
Yeah. Two games you could have just... I was like, you know, I was like, oh, we get a few against Spurs, get a hat-trick against Spurs, and then... back. What was the other game? United.
Yeah.
Back against United. You know, look short, settle back. Yeah, he's gonna fucking jump right over him. You know? Nothing. Blank. Oh well. Oh, Kane is captain, but I could feel it. I said this in the group chat, like, I could feel it in my balls that Kane is gonna do nothing against Fulham.
Nah, get a penalty or something.
And he'll hit the bar.
I'm surprised you brought that up, Jed.
Well, I was just talking about Harry Kane being a very good penalty taker, to be honest, Billy. His record in the Premier League is
sure
very good.
That? So.
Why is everyone pretending like Harry Kane isn't a good penalty taker because he missed one penalty? Like, come on, let it go, man.
I mean, it's one of those.
You weren't even bothered about England at the World Cup anyway.
No, I know, which is why I find it funny.
Well, I've already let it go, and I was bothered about England at the World Cup.
Yeah, you let it go.
The shit World Cup anyway.
It's that meme, isn't it, where you've got the mask behind it, you're crying.
No, genuinely, like, I'm not gonna say anymore now because you just said the piss. But I actually thought, it doesn't even matter to me. Like, Harry Kane to me is still a good penalty taker.
To be fair, the Jed has a point. Do you know who missed the most penalties in the Premier League? And I guess who's missed the most Premier League penalties?
Michael Owen.
Alan Shearer missed the most men. Oh, 16 penalties he's missed. Really? Do you know how many he scored?
Jesus Christ.
54.
Yeah,
just pulled it right out of my head, boys. I wasn't looking over on the screen. Just always kept on hand, you know what I mean?
I've got a question for everyone. I think just to sort of, in the random section of the podcast, if you could pick a team in the Premier League to do all or nothing, the Amazon series, all or nothing, who would you want to see, like, the behind the scenes? Because there's 3
Chelsea.
For me. Yeah,
Chelsea. It's got Chelsea.
I think Chelsea would be an absolute shambles to watch. It'd be hilarious. I think a good one would be Leeds, because I'd love to see how much Jesse Marsh is like Ted Lasso.
Leeds. They already made that. They got another season coming.
I want to see it. I want to see a Jesse Marsh version. And I think an Everton one as well. That'd be quite interesting.
Everton was the obvious answer.
I honestly think they've missed the trick with Chelsea when Villa went on the run of the playoff final we lost, the playoff final we won, and staying up on the last day. I'd have loved to have seen, like, a behind the series, all or nothing documentary on those 3 seasons. I think it'd have been incredible from the low of the playoff, losing in the playoff final.
To make all or nothing, all has to be on the table.
The problem
all,
is they
all
know
was never on the table for Villa.
maybe now under Unai, who knows? Yeah.
Villa could do maybe mid table or nothing.
Look at his face.
for a team that's only 1 point away from Liverpool, that's very brave.
You said they missed the trick with it, but you know they don't know that's going to happen before the start of the season.
You know,
we've been in the playoff final. Oh, we should have recorded this one.
They've won one, lost one. Damn it! It's been entertainment for everyone.
When they stay up on the last day, well, we've only got ourselves to blame now, lads. We, you know, it's the last 2 years.
Chelsea would be the funniest. Chelsea would be the funniest. Because it's just the camera crew would just have no idea who.
I think the Newcastle one would be quite good as well.
Yeah.
The Newcastle one would have been good if it started under Bruce and then carried on like now. But I think that probably would have been good.
No, it would have just been better.
You know, Jed, they don't know what's going to happen.
No, but what I'm saying is, can you imagine a documentary that follows Steve Bruce? Like, in management?
That's pretty much what I was saying. He was the manager when we lost the playoff final.
Maybe it should just be all or nothing Steve Bruce.
Yes. Yes. Bruce or nothing. Bruce. You know,
I listened to this is a podcast recommendation. Football Ramble interviewed Neil Warnock.
I've never heard of them before, Simo.
Yeah. And it's amazing. And he talks about the doc. He's like, he wanted it to be like he wasn't playing up for the camera, which made it that's what it needs to be. Like, they need to forget the camera's there. You know, it needs to be like Neil. Sorry, that lad, you're on bench, lad.
That's the greatest football documentary that's ever been made in the entire history of football. Nothing will ever top it. It's so
Warnock or nothing has way better foot rhyme to it than Bruce or nothing. Warnock or nothing.
Mate, you could make a joint one like Warnock or Bruce. Like, just compares the two.
Which one's the good and which one's the bad in that?
That is for the viewer to decide.
Viewer discretion.
You need a selling point. You know, like that, you've seen that Netflix series that they brought out where you can watch the episodes in any order. It's like that.
Yeah, I'm halfway through it.
You just watch any order, Bruce or Warnock.
Aye. Righto. I think we'll finish it there, boys.
Thank you very much for joining me.
All right, fair enough. Yeah.
Thank you, Simo. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
And until next time, cheerio, bye. Sports Social Podcast Network.